Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray, and I am an adult survivor of child abuse. I'll be your host this evening, and we'll be gathered together in a small panel who will discuss the issues of child abuse. And it could be any issues at all that's related to child abuse. It's prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we'd be happy to have you call in and participate as well. The number to dial is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. And the show lasts 90 minutes, so there's plenty of time for folks to call in and participate. I hope that they will. This is a very good show and a very good opportunity to understand issues of child abuse and the trauma recovery that's necessary for us to feel even halfway normal in our adulthood. I'm going to let you know we have Roberta, we have Nancy, and we have, of course, Dr. Jaime Romo on the line right now. And let me just tell you a little bit about us. We are a nonprofit organization that has only two functions in our mission statement. One is to educate the public, especially as it's related to getting taboo, the society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. That's the one that people run away from most of the time, presenting facts that show child abuse to be pandemic worldwide and a problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I also want you to know the website's address is NASCA.org, NAASCA.org. That's the first letters of our full name, National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NAASCA. And the website is filled with information and contacts and things to do and ideas and facts and so forth that will really be helpful to anybody who wants to be educated. And that includes people who have been around for a while in their recovery. It's amazing how much stuff there is on the website, and we're adding to it all the time. So if you think you know the website, please check it out every now and then because it does update, and we'd be happy to have you join us. We always have opportunities for volunteers as well. We are 100% volunteer as an organization, and all the work that's done here is done on a non-paid basis by members who call themselves family members. We say we're members of the NASCA family. And you can say you're a member of the NASCA family, too, if you want. You become a member if you say you are. There's no proof. There's no tests. There's no dues or fees. You're a member if you say you are. All right. Without further ado, let's introduce our special guest tonight. He's really a co-host, Dr. Jaime Romo from San Diego. He's an educator, consultant, author, and minister who promotes prevention and healing from child abuse, particularly child abuse by religious authorities or in the context of religious settings. I myself am one of those people, by the way, as is Jaime, so we might get into something about that. A workbook he wrote, Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters, is an integration of various disciplines that led Jaime to become a certified trauma incident reduction facilitator. And he says, there's no secret that I'm a survivor of child abuse, clergy child abuse. It's the journey of integration, transformation, and application that is most telling about my accomplishments and the life that I celebrate. So please visit Jaime's website at www.jaimeromo.org. But before you do that, let me bring Jaime on the air and welcome him back to the show. Hello, my dear friend. How are you? And welcome back.
Hey, Bill. Thanks. I'm glad to join you tonight. So you're great, and I just appreciate the space that you've created and the group, the community that you built up.
Yeah, me too. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
We always say if we help one person, we're successful. We've helped many, many, many more than that. But, you know, one person at a time, really, because you can't really assume that you can even give a talk and have everybody in the room understand. That's not how it works. You know, you usually impress one or two or three, and that's good, you know, if you do, and they come by and say, I really appreciate the talk, you know. But we don't do it for numbers. We do it for one person at a time. And I know you do the same thing. Let me ask you to, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to comment. I can hold it, actually. It's kind of more of an intro for opening up possible discussions. Just about what you highlighted, you know, the prevention and intervention and recovery, and how each of those are just so, so important. So,
bring Nancy and Roberta on, because I'd really like to make this a group discussion. And we'll see. We don't have a theme planned for tonight, unless you brought one, Jaime, which is fine. But let's bring Roberta and Nancy on from the beginning here, so they have an opportunity to participate as well. Nancy, good evening, and thanks for joining us. Why don't you tell us a couple minutes about yourself?
Hello, everyone. Good evening. My name is Nancy. I am originally from Costa Rica and grew up in Boston. I am also a child abuse survivor. So, you know, it's just a blessing to be a part of, like you just said, Doctor, the community that's being created, that has been created and fostered. And so I'm just excited to be a part of the group, part of the discussion tonight, part of the team. Definitely prevention, you know, the more we know, the more we talk about some of the things that we've been through, it helps to prevent, you know, the more information that's given out to the community. And then intervention, right? And recovery, because recovery is a process, the healing journey. There's a lot of ups and downs. A lot of times you know, you're strong on your healing journey, then you fall off. And it's just good when you hear other people sharing their journey. And it just helps to empower us as a community. We just have to be a part of this group. Thank you for having me.
Nancy, we're delighted to have you. Now, Nancy is one of those unusual people. She was so anxious to get involved at NASCA that she wanted to volunteer to be the ambassador in her state, which is West Virginia. But West Virginia already had an ambassador, so she said, "Okay, can I have Georgia?" So, oh, it's the other way around. Sorry, she's from Georgia. She took West Virginia. But anyway, I'm really happy to have you here. You don't have any plans to go back to Costa Rica. This is your permanent lifestyle, right? Here?
Not right now, but I wish, just, you know, the beach and all that good stuff. But no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm home.
Especially cold in the wintertime. I get it. All right.
Right.
Well, thank you for being with us, Nancy. We'll We'll include you on whatever discussion we have here in a moment. But let me finally introduce Roberta. She's in Oklahoma. And Roberta, we're delighted to have you here, too. You want to tell us a minute or two about your life?
Well, I'm Roberta, and I'm calling from Oklahoma City, and I'm glad y'all are here, and I'm glad I'm here. I'm just now, you know, kind of at the beginning still, but you know, of my healing process, and I'm doing real well, and I'm making a lot of progress, but a little bit about myself. I was born here in Oklahoma City, and I moved a lot because I come from a broken home, and a lot of physical, sexual, and verbal abuses at an early age, which I have no recollection in my memory yet of them because I haven't gone that far yet. And that's some deep, deep, deep wounds I haven't opened up yet. But, you know, I'm learning that I don't have to live in fear now. And I'm just really glad that I found a place where I can open up and talk and I don't have to live in fear. But, you know, I'm overcoming my fears. But I'm just glad I have support now and I'm getting more support, and I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Well, we've been appreciative of the growth that you've made over the last year, and maybe a little more since you've joined the group. And you've made, I mean, it's been amazing, to be honest. This is, you know, your presentation is not a small one. It's a very significant indication that this thing called recovery works. And those of us that have watched and heard you grow are really, really enjoying it. That's kind of our joy. When we share something and we see some of the people that we're sharing it with, you know, improve and dramatically improve like yourself, it really does our heart good.
Thank you.
We have to thank you, Roberta, sure. We don't have a theme, Jaime, but we can pick one or we can... if you brought something you'd like to start with, we can do that too. Or Nancy and Roberta can bring something up. So I'm just going to see where it goes by asking any of the three of you to bring something up that we can get the show started. And by the way, we can have several themes on tonight's show, you know, one after another after another. And it's not hard to get three or four on a show. We have plenty of time. So Jaime, Nancy, mm-hmm. and Roberta, thank you very much for being with me. Anybody have a suggested theme or talk, talking point?
Sorry. Well, different ideas, but
yeah.
I just am really appreciating what Roberta said, you know, I'm not, there's no fear now, I'm not living in fear. And if it's not a topic, I just wanted to comment that fear, I think, underlies all kinds of abusers projecting their own fear or security or whatever in destructive ways on others, and then the impact on us. That, you know, a child abuse messes with people's boundaries of, you know, themselves, you know, being in control or owners of their own bodies even. And then that undermines self-worth. And so this idea of, you know, not living in fear, that's a huge thing. That's so important because I think fear is what drives and comes from like authoritarian groups or families or churches or, you know, where nobody can contradict that person in charge. And that's where all kinds of abuse thrives. And then the fear of intervening, you know, the fear of speaking up, because the reality is when people do speak up, become advocates, then they're not just challenging an individual, but the whole group that surrounds that individual and a whole sense of identity and belonging. And so there's a huge risk of alienation, isolation, or even, you know, hostility and loss of community. And even the recovery side, I mean, people can still kind of hold the fear of the uncertainty. Like, now what? If I'm not that old person, I'm not going to hold on to those old coping mechanisms, now what? I mean, that uncertainty, that that, I guess, can be a kind of fear as well, a false expectation appearing real, that we're not going to be successful, or we're going to do our best, and after all this work, then we're still not going to be happy. And so that fear is a huge topic, and I just wanted to comment and say, you know, like, beautiful.
Well, I think there's plenty of material
using that
there
as a barometer.
Using just using fear as a topic, there's plenty of material, and you know, I think it's something that all of us who have been through trauma identify with. Almost everybody has fear of, especially of revealing what's going on with us, and that we call it, you know, keeping a secret. But the reason to keep the secret is because we don't want the consequence of our speaking out. That makes us. I mean, my biggest fear, frankly, was fear of abandonment, because I had experienced abandonment over and over, and I didn't want to do it again. You know, and so I held off. You know, actually bringing up the topic that really mattered. You know, I brought up other things, but not the topic that really mattered. Fearing that I would be dumped. Well, that's one thing you'll learn about NASCA, anybody who's listening, that we don't dump people. In fact, one of the remarkable things here is it takes almost nothing for us to believe you and for us to give you space to tell your story or to share with us. And you will be amazed at the storytelling that goes on here of people who are no longer afraid and welcome the opportunity to come back and to share their experience, strength, and hope on a show. We do five of them a week. Three out of the five are personal stories, personal storytelling, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And these, you know, it's kind of an opportunity once you get into recovery to take your story and use it to tell it in a useful way. Instead of being afraid, you become braver. Because you've not been told to go away, you know. And so anyway, that occurred to me. Nancy or Roberta, would you like to comment on anything to do with fear here at the beginning of the show?
I would. I just wanted to say that, you know, I know I said I don't live in fear, but I still haven't overcome all my fears, because there's a lot of my story that's blocked out. And I just haven't reached that place, them places yet. I haven't digged in my heart and soul and been able to expose it or to identify with it, you know. And so there's just, you know, I guess mostly there's just two parts of my life that I just wonder about sometimes. But, you know, at first I wanted to, I mean, I really wanted to know. I wanted to know. And then I just said, it'll come when it comes, you know, it'll happen when it happens. It'll be revealed when it needs to be revealed, you know? And so I'm glad that I'm being willing to be patient and also learn to, I mean, another thing I'm learning is self-control, and I'm learning that I don't have to run. I don't have to run from people. I still am afraid of a few people, but I don't have to run from them, you know. And but I wouldn't be in the same room with them, you know, alone.
Right.
And so I'm learning, you know, and I'm learning to, you know, to be a little bit, you know, cautious about. I'm not cautious. I mean, I'm learning to be cautious about things, but not over cautious, you know. But then again, if I want to open up and expose something and talk about something, I think that, and shed a light on something, I think it would be helpful. Then I can put it behind me and I can be stronger, you know. So yeah, there's a time and place for everything. And
let me say, Roberta, there's a time and place for fear, too. I mean, there's a sense of that fear is, it, you know, it can be useful. You know, when you're threatened, really threatened, and you have fear, that's a good thing, because it makes you take an action perhaps quicker than you would have otherwise. And that has to do with, you know, with really our primordial, I think, experience comes back from being in the swamps and the deserts and the jungles. But But the kind of fear that we're talking about, there's two ways it can be expressed with trauma. And one of them, I know for you, is because, and you've shared about this, so I'm not giving away a secret. You have shared about how, there are pieces of your life that you don't have memory about. And then there are other people, and I'm one of that group, who have memory of everything. I don't have a memory. And frankly, I wished I didn't have a memory because I felt everything that I'd gone through all the time, which may be one of the reasons that I turned out to be, interested in imbibing in drugs and alcohol so that I could at least numb the feelings and the thinking that was going on. But both are part of it. And there's quite a few people who whose brain won't let them, remember because it's a defense mechanism, at least for a while. And I don't know where you are, but you've improved a great deal, I know. So there are different kinds of fears. This is a great topic, I think, Jaime. So let me see if Nancy agrees, and maybe she can throw something into the conversation here. Nancy, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree with you. There is, so many different things that were just said about fear. But I feel that it's so important to talk about your story, but there is a process. Like I'm not completely free to express who my abuser was and really get into that or, really go deep into it because of fear. You want to protect the person who's still alive, the family member. And so it's just a process. And like you were just saying, memory loss and then remembering everything and then being in between where sometimes you don't remember anything, which is great life, but then you get these flashes that come up, right? Or you remember certain things and you're like, wow, when you really think about it, and when I hear other people's story, I see them as a child, but when I think about my story, it's just my story, I got to keep going, I'm just used to being strong. But when you really look at our stories and look at the child in the story, it's like, whoa, it was really sad. You'd be like, wow, poor child, And but that child's still living in fear even when they become an adult because of fear of judgment, of being, like you just said, being isolated, being kicked out of the group, not being believed, and, or just the shame of you've already forgiven that person, you've already moved on and don't want to make it an issue and keep bringing it up. If you've already moved past that in your healing process or you're still trying to. But, all right, that's just one area of it. But fear goes deep. Fear goes deep in many areas. Definitely when you're experiencing a lot of these things and you don't have anyone to relate that can relate to your story, can relate to you, you become isolated, and a lot of times you will find yourself like, oh, let me take this pill, go to sleep early. Oh, let me try to take, I've been doing melatonin and trying to see if that helps me to sleep better at night. But it's a process. It's a process.
Okay. It is a process, and I want people to know that the process includes the probability, not 100%, I don't want to promise anything 100%, but the probability is that the more you attempt to walk through your fears, the more successful you'll be. And that's how I experienced. That you can give into fear and decide not to take an action, not to share a certain part of your story, and experience, go ahead and experience the fear of abandonment. But what you've really done is you've abandoned yourself, in a way. You don't give people the opportunity to love you unconditionally, which is often happening here at NASCA. Instead, you withdraw or just don't offer part of yourself. Now, I'm not blaming anybody when they happen. That happens quite a bit. We have to kind of grow into, I think Nancy and Roberta both brought it up, that you kind of have to grow into the space where even though you've told a lot, there's still more to tell. Sometimes it's the itty-bitty stuff that's in the niches that's the most scary to tell, but it's okay, and that's what I really want to I want to offer people who are listening that, you know, the fear of abandonment or the fear of any of the fears that when I came into the groups, first of all, I had feared going into the groups. Then somebody told me that they had gone into the groups and that it was okay. So they invited me to some meetings, and I went to some meetings, and I was really surprised. The meetings were, in effect, provided my ability to hear people telling their stories or pieces of their stories, and it was shocking. I couldn't believe that they could be that honest, and that the other people in the room would applaud for them and laugh and sometimes at some of the things that they told them. I mean, it was, and these things that they were saying were, you know, the kind of thing that I was sure would be terrifying to bring up, but they did it. Then it took a while for me to trust the fact that if I spoke up, I wouldn't be abandoned, because you feel like, you know, you're going to be thrown out if you open your mouth. You know, I had been in many instances not allowed to proceed because of a variety of things. The biggest one was that I was a male, and back then they didn't have a lot of males in the groups. They were mostly female. So when a male came in and he wanted to recover from sexual abuse, it was kind of frowned upon more than that. But anyway, it turned out that in the end, there isn't a huge difference between the honesty that a female can bring to the group and the honesty that a male can bring to the group. And that's really what matters, because the more honest we can be, the more of an impression we'll make to the newcomer. And of course, as I said earlier, our main goal is to help one person at a time. That's the newcomer who may not have considered any of this before. So, Jaime, we've gone the rounds here and talked about the theme that you said wouldn't really be appropriate for a theme. Back to you.
Yeah.
You have something you'd like to add here?
Definitely. You know, I guess when I think of what do we want, you know, we want to be whole, intact, you know, to have integrity, meaning being integrated, and so that we can have an authentic self. And I think that's how we started. And then those, you know, we may have been kind of broken up, or the fear actually does fragment us. It fragments our memories. I mean, there's a chemical process where, you know, the oxytocin kicks in and allows us to endure abuse and, you know, all this, get through a traumatic event, but also kind of fragments those memories. And so there's something fragmenting and about, you know, what happens to us when we are afraid, or put in situations where we are afraid of, you know, physical, emotional, you know, spiritual, sexual abuse. And I also wanted to normalize that, you know, like Bill's saying, there's no judgment. It's a natural, you know, response to try to protect ourselves. And I found, you know, my current role is I work with people at the end of life, and it's very common for people who have kind of been in control their whole life to all of a sudden they're having these dreams, or they're having, like this one guy I spoke with yesterday, he's having these very unpleasant hallucinations, like he's like daytime reliving things from the past. And his family, you know, was oblivious to all of this. And he's been a very loving person, and it's normal. So, you know, so Roberta, when you say, you know, when it's time, these memories will, you know, show up, you know, and sometimes that when it's time is when it's safe. And sometimes that when it's time is when we don't have a lot of time, and our internal mechanism is just saying, hey, you know, let go of this stuff, you know, so you can just be at peace, so you can just be present, so you can know that you're okay. And so there's just, you know, a couple of thoughts about, yeah, this, what fear does in it's a natural process, because we have experienced, you know, this abuse, which overwhelms us. And there are ways that people kind of get control of their minds and can be more tolerant and able to sit with these memories that do come up. And I forget how you put it, Bill, but the idea of, like, the more often you, you know, kind of go through this or allow yourself to, you know, recognize your story or tell your story and so on, that it builds up a capacity. If we don't do it, if we don't, like, overshare and make ourselves, you know, just, you know, raw and, you know, exposed to people who aren't going to be safe. But, you know, there's a philosophy, Buddhism, that is all about that. It is not a religion. The trauma work that I do, traumatic incident reduction, and I'll plug it more later, but that's just to say, you know, ultimately that's a process where people recognize as much as is there that presents itself, and then it's a safe space, and they have choice in their own voice of what they're going to share, and then you go through it and go through it, and after a while, you know, it may have a lot of charge, you know, at some point, but after a while, it really loses a lot of that. And people get to bring those pieces of memories back together, again, back to being more whole and more integrated. And then we are in a different place. And so there are different methods, even practices, that are helping us to be present and not reactive, you know, and to be compassionate. You know, and not, you know, beat ourselves up because, you know, we feel fear or because we react or, you know, or not perfect or whatever. But, so I'm just validating all of what you said to say, yeah, we're all in this journey. And that's it. I got a card years ago when I initially was, like, overwhelmed with, and at the time it was the alcohol stuff in my family that created a lot of violence. It wasn't the sexual abuse by the clergy and all the things that followed. That was years later. But someone sent me a card that just had, you know, like, I hope you're feeling good. I hope you're feeling better. Yeah, on the first page, it just said, I hope you're feeling. And then the next page, it was nothing. It's like, that was it. I hope you're feeling. Just allow ourselves to feel. So as much as we are allowing that, I think we're moving in a good direction. And this is a good group to do that with.
Well said.
May I say something?
Of course you can. I was going to offer you the opportunity. Let me say one thing before you do, though. It sounded to me like that's the kind of message that you give someone who is on their deathbed. And you work with people that are dying. I think it's in a hospice situation, which I admire very much. I love hospice. And the message that you just gave us sounds like something you could say to them, perhaps to comfort them, and perhaps to also, you know, perhaps to offer them an opportunity to unburden themselves sort of before they pass. So we'll get back to that if you want to, Jaime. But the ladies there want to share? Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just wanted to say a couple of things while I was listening to, is it Dr. Jaime?
Dr. Romo.
Yes, okay. Dr. Romo, okay. I just wanted to say, you know, for a lot of years, I went through a lot of oppression. I was told to shut up, and anytime I tried to speak up for myself, I was told I was crazy, and that went with me for a long time. And then whenever I tried to even talk to some of the perpetrators that, a lot of them were family, and it was like, forget it. It's all in the past. And, you know, things like that. I heard that over and over and over. And so finally I said, well, the only reason why they're doing that is because they're the ones that help put the wounds there. You know, they don't understand my invisible scars and wounds because they were busy putting them there, you know? And so, that's what I finally, and I started praying for them. You know, I just wanted to say that, and also I wanted to say that there is a little bit of fear of, because whenever I was younger, I used to have a seizure disorder, and I had to take narcotics for it, And I do have a fear of going back around that time also is when I went through a lot of abuse. And I was like 5 or 6 years old, or maybe even younger. And so I have a fear of, because, you know, people, I mean, I still feel like people are in my sacred space, you know. And I always fear people putting their hands on me and they're not supposed to, or if someone's in my sacred space, it's not supposed to be in there. And, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like, yeah, I just feel like spirits are visiting me that aren't supposed to or something, I don't know, or people that had their hands on me are trying to be too close to me. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know what it is. It's just what I'm feeling right now. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Well, you know, you reminded me of something I used to say quite a while ago. I don't remember if I said it in the last 10 years. But when I was early in recovery, I used to try to avoid family and so forth because they always pushed my buttons. And then at some point I realized, well, it's not that they pushed my buttons, it's that they installed them originally. So, you know, maybe they were just firing them up. You know, that's kind of how I saw it. And today I don't do that to myself too much. I kind of take responsibility, frankly, for my feelings and for I don't blame other people for how I feel. They may have had something to do with how you know why I originally felt these things, but I'm you know kind of a big enough boy, sort of a big boy, you know, that I can hold myself responsible and not blame others, and that's growth too. So a good share there, Roberta. Thank you very much. Okay, who would like to make the next share?
Well, no, I'd like to yes. follow up at least about, you know, for people to be, like, touching us, you know, putting their hands on us. And now it's I think it's funny. Well, it was kind of funny not too long after it happened as well. But, you know, for many years, I was very active in speaking at a bunch of clergy sexual abuse and always challenging parishioners, you know, active churchgoers, to speak up, you know, like, why are you silent? And there was a group that seemed to be making an effort to be supportive, to say, we still have, you know, some kind of spiritual life and we are going to be an ally. And the one, their version of being an ally, and I know it was sincere, was to have a mass and to invite people who had experienced clergy sexual abuse to attend, to be supported, right, to in that context, to kind of bring healing. And like, so I guess what this is speaking to is, like, you know, it's easy for us to expose ourselves to others' good intentions or bad intentions, you know, too soon before we're really ready. And so part of this service was, you know, that good mm-hmm. people would come up and they would, like, put hands on the, you know, survivors and offer, like, a blessing. And it sounded in my head, I guess, like I was wanting to be supportive. And so anyway, I volunteered. And people are, like, putting their hands on me, and I just started crying. And I'm thinking, they're thinking, oh, this is helping him. And I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing with these people, like, touching me? Like, there's no boundaries here. Get out of here. So the point is, like, yeah, we have to have boundaries, and it's a learning process to know. And we do sometimes through trial and error, you know, what we're open to, you know, and what is safe. And these were people who are so well intentioned, but I join you, Roberta, in that, you know, in that kind of caution about things that have been a part of the past that were not good experiences, whether it's, you know, narcotic use again or things that are medicinal or, you know, hands and people trying to help, but not in a way that's helpful.
Thank you.
See that? Somebody got something out of what you said, Roberta. That's pretty good, huh?
Pardon me?
I said, somebody got something out of what you said. Isn't that wonderful?
But you know, I was just sitting there thinking while he was talking, I was sitting there thinking about, you know, I mean, it's like something will come up and you know, used to, well, right now I'm on this meditation, I'm being passive and minimizing things because I'm really hurt, angry, really deep inside, but, you know, it's controlling everything, but keeping me calm. But, you know, I've been getting all these things coming up, and like the other day I had a dream, all these three or four women were kissing on me, you know. I said, where did that dream come from? And then I thought about being locked in this closet or a room, in a dark room, and I don't know. It's just like all these things start coming up, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, I guess. But you know, with this medicine, I'm not being over emotional. I'm not crying. I'm just accepting it, you know.
Now, are you saying that these were things you experienced in a dream state? Is that
well,
what you mean?
No, I well, yeah, I mean, I had the dream. Well, the dream that I had, yeah. Well, I know one thing happened that I'd mentioned, but a little bit about it. But you know, I don't know all about it. But I do remember having to go into a dark room, you know, and I was real young and I was locked in there, you know. And then I don't remember women kissing on me though, you know, that was in a dream. And, but you know, I don't know, you know, it's just all these, I used to get nightmares, flashbacks and voices, and I only experienced that, two times later on in life. Whenever I was young, I used to really get real bad nightmares and I'd wake up crying, you know, and, but I haven't experienced that. So, and I've only had two anxiety attacks since I moved back up here, but this is not my safe place to go through my complete healing journey because, you know, there's just too many violent crimes that happened to me in my early childhood here. And it wouldn't be good if I crossed the path of someone that I, you know, and I over, because I have a tendency to overreact and react, you know. And so I have to, you know, I would feel safer not around the people that did things, you know.
Now, I just want to say that false evidence, appearing real, which is what one of the things, I don't know if you guys heard it, but Tiny said, affects us in so many ways. One of them is, for in your case, I know I've been sharing with you since you were in Texas, and you were in Texas quite a while before you made the decision to move to Oklahoma. And then you decided to move to Oklahoma, and you put everything together to do that, and you got there. And then you've been there now for a while, and you're now experiencing, you know, the kind of, as you say, a fear that you might walk up to, or somebody might walk up to you from your past as a child. But it hasn't happened. So false evidence.
That's
true. It hasn't happened. And it may never happen. We don't know. So we are, in other words, putting ourselves through a kind of a test all the time. If it happens to me, I'm going to do blah, 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 you know. I don't want to react this way or that. And so we kind of, it's kind of damaging to ourselves to put ourselves in that space of, you know, it's kind of just worry. I don't want to worry anymore. I want to have kind of a faith and a trust that the path I'm on is the right one. And, you know, if I run into somebody who I might remember or brings on a memory of somebody from the past, I'll just have to accept it, but I won't own it, because it's not what I want. You know what I mean? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Roberta. What were you going to say?
I just wanted to say that it's not just worry. It's really like self-defense in a way, because I know what they're capable of, you know, because they're bigger than me, and I know they're, some of them can be dangerous, you know. And so that's just all I wanted to say.
Well, but again, let me just, I don't want to make a big deal of this, but they were bigger than you is more appropriate. They're not bigger than you now. You know, you live in a kind of a fear of what they used to do to you. Even if you ran up against one of them, they would not be able to take advantage of you the way that you, they were able to take advantage of you as a child. Because now you're not a child anymore. And you could definitely say no, you know, for example. But anyway, this
well,
is something
I just
that
wanted to say, you know, if, yeah, if they're thinking about hurting me, I mean, you don't know criminal minds, you know, how they operate. You know, it's like their strategies, tactics, you don't know, you know.
Okay. Nancy, do you have anything you'd like to share?
Yes.
Nancy.
Oh, sorry. I was painting my nails. Sorry. Okay. So I agree that, you know, when you've been through trauma, you've been through abuse, and then you know who the perpetrators are, they're still around, or they live near you, or, you know, they have access to you, so you can actually bump into each other or anything like that, and you're starting to talk, you're starting to tell, you do get nervous because you don't know how people could react. You know, those are normal things, but in general, when you're walking through your healing journey, taking those people out of the picture, it's hard, you know, it's really hard to kind of like relax or enjoy your healing process when you have, you're still living in a state of worry. You know, it makes it really hard to enjoy the process of healing and really get into it when you're worrying, you know. And it's understandable why we worry, because there's different reasons why we worry. But I feel that, you know, when we, like, there's things that maybe we can do to help us get rid of some of that worry, release some of that worry, not focus on the worry and put energy on the good things that are pulling us away from the worry, right? And then that way we can just take control, because when we keep worrying and keep getting stressed out, and, you know, sometimes we can get sick, depressed, angry. We're just living as, we're re-victimizing ourselves. That's how we're living. We are literally re-victimizing ourselves when we don't do at least some steps to work on that area to get rid of some of that worry, because it's just hard. I mean, the healing process is up and down roller coaster ride. It can be. Sometimes it could be just great. I want to focus on it just being great from here on up for the rest of my life, for it to be a healing, a great healing experience. And other people are getting healed while we're all healing. It's like a win-win-win. But healing is a process.
Well, I just wanted to say, I don't think I'm worrying. I really think it's just being cautious. I mean, you can think it's worry, but I just think it's being cautious, because, you know, when you're talking about guns and sex and drugs and money and people doing crazy things, mm-hmm. and, you know, conjuring up stuff and plotting things, you know, because I've already sensed it through my spirit, you know. So that's all I wanted to say.
Right. But you're taking control of your healing. That's the good thing about it, you know, and that's the focus right now, is that we're taking control of our healing and we're trying to, you know, help other people while we're still healing, because of the journey. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But
being courageous and brave.
Yeah, you're being
I'm just trying to be
brave.
Courageous and brave.
That's right. That's how we're supposed to be. That's the good part. And we're doing it together. So we're getting stronger. We're learning how to share. We're learning how to deal, how to process. We're learning together.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you were saying something about even in these dreams that you're just kind of observing them. Is that right? Without having a big reaction.
What? Are you talking to me, Roberta?
Yes, but and I guess.
Oh yeah,
I
the dream.
To, like, open it up.
Yeah.
Not personalized. I don't want to do an interview here.
Okay.
But I guess that the idea in general is, you know, how to me it's a very spiritual practice to be able to not deal with dreams, but our day-to-day things. And, you know, if it's a worry or a reaction or, you know, stuff that happens around us, that we have an ability not just to get caught up in it, but to notice them and pay attention. But then maybe, you know, let them go by, right? Instead of like ruminating or whatever. So I don't want to like focus on you in particular in the dreams, but just this kind of bigger idea of like, that's a step in recovery and happiness is to know that we're okay in the midst of whatever may be going on. You know, that the reality is that, I mean, there was somebody telling me today, a patient, you know, this world is a mess. And like, yeah. And how do we find a sense of either goodness or, you know, joy or something that is in us, you know, or beautiful in our world, in our little space, you know, like we may not be able to deal with everything around us and control most things, but just that idea of being an observer, again, for me, it's like that's a beautiful spiritual practice or a mindfulness practice, but also a really one that builds up or rebuilds our own boundaries and our own sense of self. Because, like, even our dreams, well, that's my dreams aren't me. You know, things that are going on, they're interesting. And there's a whole other discussion about, you know, can some dreams actually be kind of literal, like remembering things or seeing things that are going to happen, or also just the dreams are like parts of us. Like, what is it? Everything in the dream is me. So, you know, that's interesting. You know, and I'm in wonder about that. Anyway, but the idea of observing, I mean, again, congrats. I think that's a healthy thing for everybody.
Well, that's well said, Jaime. And I'm not sure. I think I do have to own the concepts that come into my brain, not necessarily the facts, obviously, in a dream state, but the concepts, I think, are created by my own experience. So I do take ownership of dreams, in a sense. But on the other hand, it doesn't take very much for us to be off kilter. You know, you have a little fever, and then the dreams you have are horrifying. You know, they can be. And that's not something from your experience. That's, you know, that's sickness, you know, happening to you. And it, I don't know, I don't understand the brain well enough to figure out how that occurs. But I just know there's a big difference between the healthy brain that's dreaming and the sick person who has a sick brain that's dreaming. So anyway, now I wanted to go back and make a mention though of the hugging stuff that you talked about in the mass that you were participating in. You know, there was a time way back when they called it the kiss of peace started in the mass, and the kiss of peace was shaking hands with each other pretty much, or waving at each other across the congregation or whatever. But there were people who would hug each other and so forth. I got very comfortable with hugging, and it didn't bother me at all. In fact, I felt better when I was hugging. So this lasted all the way until my adulthood, until 10 years ago or something. I hugged somebody who I've been meeting with at least monthly for a year or more on a board, board of directors for a charity, for a healthcare charity, a clinic charity. And we were saying goodbye to each other as a group, and I went up and I hugged a woman who was with us for at least a year by that point, and she froze like a rock. She got like a tree, and then she pushed me. And then she like pushed me away, and it was really almost a violent thing that she did. And I was kind of aghast by how that reaction came out. But I hadn't really been thinking about it for some time, that there are people who don't want to be hugged, you know, who don't want to be touched, who don't want you to be close to them. And I'm not that person, but I, you know, now I've learned that I have to almost ask permission or indicate, you know, is it okay to hug? And and get permission to do it, and you know, not freak somebody out. And if somebody says no, that has to be okay too, and it is. But I hadn't thought of it in a long time, and when that happened, I was pretty surprised. But I assumed everybody liked to be hugged. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there are endorphins that are released. You know, good feelings that come up when we're connected, and so that's a natural good thing. And we would assume that that would continue. But yeah, the reality is boundaries. Right? Sometimes that may feel invasive, you know, or may, you know, trigger something. Maybe the other person may not even be conscious of at the time. So I think of universal precautions with our own experience, you know, like, hey, check in before doing something because that didn't happen for us, right?
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, I know Nancy loves hugging, right, Nancy?
Well, I actually, yeah, it doesn't bother me, but I do know a lot of people that have shared that they don't like to be hugged. They went through abuse. They were, some were raped, and they would literally say that they are just not comfortable with it until they join church, and then because everybody's hugging and hugging and hugging, they became like it helped to break that barrier down for some people. But again, everybody's healing process is different. One thing that I do know, I am going to switch the topic for a second and go back to the thing of dreams. And I'm not sure exactly where you guys left off with that, but for me, one thing that I do realize, and a lot of gifted children have been through a lot of trauma. And so we get a lot of dreams. And it could go, you can go through a phase where you don't get any dreams, and then you can go through a phase where you get dreams that are very prophetic. And you're like, wow, it's like, you know, you get a lot of the deja vu, but you also start to connect some of your dreams. And then you get those dreams that are just silly, that don't make sense to you, or nightmares, right? But then, I don't know, that's just something that I can say, that a lot of gifted children are gifted in many different areas, but they do get a lot of prophetic dreams. So that's normal to hear.
Okay. Well, I like dreaming. I like sleeping and I like dreaming because you kind of stretch yourself in a dream. There's a liberation that happens in a dream that you don't have in personal life. You know, that we have self-imposed and societally imposed, you know, barriers and restrictions that you don't have in your dreams. So you cross those lines sometimes, and I kind of enjoy it, but you can't make them happen. In my experience, they can't be directed, self-directed. They do occur, but you can't make them happen, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I just want to say something.
Go right ahead, Roberta.
Okay, go ahead. I apologize. I didn't know you were still talking.
I didn't know I was still talking either. Go ahead, Roberta.
Oh. Okay, well, anyway, I just wanted to say that I'm going to have to get off the phone now. I don't know how many more minutes we got, but I just wanted to say before I go that I'm at a place in my healing process that I'm willing to go through whatever I have to go through, whatever darkness or whatever healing, whatever the healing is, and find out exactly what happened in all the everywhere I've got memory blocks, you know. And so that you know, I just wanted to say that because, you know, used to I wouldn't even begin to even want to try to walk through it, you know. And now I'm ready. And I've never said that in my whole life, you know. And that's just all I wanted to say.
Wow, that was powerful.
Go ahead, Nancy.
And I was going to say, wow, that was powerful, you know, to get to that place where you're able to stand up and be so brave, take so much bravery to say that. So I'm very proud of you. You're doing an awesome job. And I'm excited for
you
and your journey. Good luck.
Yeah. Well, I had to realize that, you know, because, I mean, you know, one of my near-death experiences, I almost lost my eyesight, and I might have lost my eyesight, my hearing, but it came back or something, but I don't know, because I don't know all about what happened after my near-death experience. I don't even remember much about it, but I was unconscious, I know that, but I used to be afraid that I had so much fear that the lights wouldn't come back on. You know, I was always afraid I was going to be stuck in the dark, you know? And, so I had to get over that, and I had to realize that my Creator is not going to let me go, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like there's my Creator's got plans for my life, you know? And I'm not saying that it was right or wrong what I experienced in this lifetime so far, but I can honestly say it's you know, that by listening to y'all and knowing that there's a lot of people on NASCA, is that a lot of the things that I experience can be helpful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew that, you know. I always was ashamed to talk. I thought, you know, I was like, I was the only one, you know. And I thought, you know, I didn't know there was other people out there that has suffered similar things to me that I have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing those. And, you know, there's just like when people share their life experiences, that it helps everyone have like a bigger picture of what healing is and learn. And we're just talking about dreams. You know, there's a thing called the dreaming matrix, and it's kind of unusual, but it's really interesting where people have this facilitated sharing time of dreams, whether they're recent or old, that are just kind of impressive. And then, you know, when we put them together, it's like having this bigger understanding of like the world that we live in or big social issues. And so, I mean, thank you for sharing, because this is how we actually are more, you know, how we have a bigger perspective. And appreciate your courage, you know, being open to, you know, say, I'm ready. I'm gonna learn. I'm not afraid. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now if it wasn't for y'all. I wouldn't be able to.
Well,
I would not be where I'm sitting right now, being able to have the courage, if it wasn't for y'all.
Let me quickly say something before you have to bail, because I think it's important for you to hear that you've just given kind of a testimony that what you do about fear is you replace it with faith, and you have over time, you know, developed this faith stronger and stronger, and it's now not just a theory to you, it's the reality of your life. So you're replacing the fear with the faith, and I think we hear that theme throughout what's being shared tonight, and frequently with other members of NASCA, of course, too. But when you're in faith, it's hard to fear. You know, you're either in faith or not.
Yeah.
You know, so I know you are. You know, yeah. So I think you're doing great. Did you want to say anything else before you left, Roberta?
I just wanted to say in 2019, from 1979 to 2019. I went through a lot of things, and but I can't go into everything I went through. But I just wanted to say, in 2019, whenever I decided to quit living in fear, that's whenever I told God I was sorry for almost losing my faith, and that's whenever I got a different kind of connection than I've ever had in my whole life. You know, learning from anybody else anywhere, you know, or being taught by anybody else anywhere. And so now it's like, you know, it's like, we can, you know, love conquers all, you know. It's like, I'm ready to conquer this, you know. It's like, well, you know, it's just, you can't do it all in one day, you know. You got to be patient and things like that, you know.
Hmm.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then I'm human, but I do have a sense of humor, too, you know, and it's kind of, you know, I mean, I always thought I could be a good comedian or a good actress, you know, or or a drama queen or something. But anyway.
No,
well,
you're not a drama queen, but you're welcome. You're not a drama queen, but you are someone that has a good sense of humor. You even laugh at yourself sometimes and so forth. So I really appreciate that. All right,
thank y'all.
Thank
I need
you
to
so
go
much.
Now.
Don't forget. We're on 5 nights a week. Don't forget. Love you.
Okay,
Alberta.
Thank you. Love y'all too. Thank you. Good night.
You know, I say that.
Good night,
Roberta. I say that for the benefit of anyone that's listening to the show right now. I needed to repeat our call-in number, and this is the perfect time to do it. It's 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. As you can see, we're not sure what the next thing is going to be that we'll talk about, but you can have multiple themes on the same show, and we would love for you to call in and perhaps suggest something that you'd like to hear us talk about or that you'd like to share with us, a theme or a topic or an issue that perhaps you want to know more information about or you want to share something that you've learned about. Please do that, because that's how this works. It's a shared experience of a community of people who we do struggle, frankly, but it gets better. We struggle with the trauma that occurs because we were abused as children, either sexually, physically, emotionally, or through neglect, mostly through sexual abuse. The result is severe trauma. It can be really severe. And so anyway, any of those four or any combination of those four, we talk about, and I'd love to see some other people call in. Another thing that I'd like to say is that we, at this point, have a need for some volunteers to come forward to replace some people that are, stepping down from different things and so forth. You know, it takes a lot of energy to do these jobs. And so when somebody does it for quite some time, I understand when they need to step aside for a while. That doesn't mean they can't come back, of course. But we have some positions that are like that that we really need people to do. And there are a couple of them that do require, some skill sets and time frames and so forth that might be beyond just once in a while, but something you have to kind of devote yourself to. In any case, assure yourself that we have things you can do at NASCA, because most of us come to a point in our recovery where we seek opportunities to be of service. We seek opportunities to help others. We are doing this out of the gratitude of recognizing that people have helped us. And if people have helped us, then maybe we could participate too and help others. So, this is what we're doing now. So 646-595-2118 is the dedicated number every night. And if you want to volunteer, just get in touch with us and we will explore the opportunities. Okay? Let's see. Well, do you guys have another theme?
Well, I just needed to jump in the car because I'm going to music practice, actually, which is a creative outlet, already something that brings me joy. And I'm reminded, because all these lights, you know, everybody's put up lights in their houses. But the lights mean different things, not necessarily a particular religious one. Even this is kind of a big focus. I guess I'm thinking now of, as we come into these, different holidays, traditions that celebrate lights. The light represents hope, and I just want to share an example of something that I put up actually at my work that I think a lot of people have benefited from, and I guess it's an invitation for others to think of ways that we can build hope in the midst of whatever, things are difficult. So we put up this little, like a fake tree. It looks like a white birch with no leaves. And, in the 50s, there was a young woman who was following in Japan the bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki, she had leukemia, and in her hospitalization, she made these paper cranes, and every day, you know, there was another paper crane, and it was a sign of hope and towards her healing. And that tradition has gone on in many ways. And we have this in the lobby of this medical center, where all these, you know, medical professions are kind of, professionals are kind of burnt out and often feeling kind of hopeless and worn down. And people have been putting these paper cranes up. And so I guess for me, it's an example of doing something that reminds us that there's not just what's going on that is real, but there we're in a community, and that things do get better, things change, we grow. And so I guess I want to invite, you know, any thoughts about what brings you hope, or practical things that might be helpful.
Okay.
Go ahead, Nancy. Yeah. For me, I would say, what brings me hope is knowing that other people are becoming stronger because we are helping. That gives me hope. It gives me hope to know that survival, people can survive with mental illness, or when they go through a mental illness season, that there is hope that you can live a healthy life after abuse, you can live a good life, and that all the things that that are supposed to be for you will be for you, and all those things are that you deserve those things. You know, you deserve to have a beautiful life after abuse. Mm-hmm. That because of your trauma, you're not completely broken. So for me, my hope is to be able to heal and to help others to heal, and then I feel like I'm doing my job, right? Where some of my hope comes from.
Well, that's really good. I like you, gain hope from the, it's really occasional, it's not all the time, but occasional acknowledgement that NASCA has made a difference, and sometimes these are huge differences. I get acknowledgments occasionally about how we've changed people's lives. It's not me, but it's us together. But that in its, that usually comes to me because I'm a founder, and so my email address is easy to find, I guess. But it's really special when people go out of their way to say, you know, I remember 3 years ago when I first met you or met NASCA, and I finally decided I would tell my story, and my life has completely changed since then. And that happens. I hear that sometimes. That is kind of thrilling almost. It happens kind of privately for me. I don't share that a lot, but, you know, it's, well, I share it in an instance like this when I'm asked. And it does happen. So I don't know. I guess that's joy. It is joy for me to be the recipient of such things. And just it gives me a sense that, you know, after all these years, I must be doing something right. You know, I must be doing something right. Because I lose faith in that after a while. I, too, get frustrated, you know, and I get come beside myself for the amount of energy that it's needed to keep this going and to, you know, make it vibrant and to get new people involved and all that. And it's physically demanding in the sense that I do a lot of the websites and I do the phone answering and I do the emails and all that stuff. And, you know, it's a everyday thing. It's not a once a week thing. It's an everyday thing. So it can become frustrating if you don't remember that the aggregate of all those things that we do, you know, is saving lives, literally. And that's pretty darn important, really, when you come down to it. So,
well, thank you. You know, I sometimes love biographies or documentaries of people who have just stayed with something, knowing that it was difficult and cost them a lot. I saw the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg last night. I'd seen it before, but it's really amazing. And so there's a movie made about a different topic, an attorney who it's called Dark Waters, I think, who found and prosecuted DuPont for polluting thousands of people and causing all this harm, and lots of people give me hope, who are just doing things that are difficult that are not about them, but they're to help somebody else. And so, Bill, thank you. And there's just like many people that when I think, it'd be a lot easier not to do something, I acknowledge that, and then know that I'm a part of something bigger. It matters what I do, and continue to do it. A lot of good people. So I think of that because there's larger context of many people who are doing some very destructive and dangerous things on the policy level. And look, as Mr. Rogers would say, look for the helpers.
I don't remember what Mr. Rogers would say because I'm too old to have watched it live. I did see pieces of it as I was doing
focus. I don't often quote Mr. Rogers, but
I don't know. I know his song a little bit. Won't you be my neighbor? And that's a sentiment I agree with. Let's try to be a little more neighborly, a little more acceptance. A little would help. A little more sharing would help. A little more of understanding. In other words, less judgment. Would help. And it doesn't take a lot. It does take a little, but it doesn't take a lot for us to kind of change our perspective, because when we change any of those things, it kind of shifts our universe. We have a different experience in life when we come from a place of faith and not fear. That we're all part of the same journey, I guess. We're all sort of the same family, and we're all neighbors in the end. Won't you be my neighbor is what I remember about Mr. Rogers. And he changed his shoes every time, something like that, in his sweater.
Canada. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, you go ahead, Jaime.
Well, I was just going to kind of affirm that it makes sense to given abuse and all kinds of unresolved stuff and ongoing reason to be skeptical about people's trustworthiness or wanting somebody to knowing if we can count on people, like that's the idea of neighbors, we can count on somebody, that it's an exercise of courage. And in that way, it's kind of radical, because there's a lot of reason to not trust, to isolate. And I think that's toxic. I mean, there are so many studies that basically show how we are better when we lean on others, when we not just give help, but when we allow us, others to help us. When we are vulnerable, that builds trust. Even though maybe our experiences would say, hey, you're vulnerable, you're going to be hurt real bad. So, it's a radical stance just to be a good neighbor, just to be someone who is more compassionate. And and not, you know, doing the Pan Olympics, which I was an expert at, and maybe I would like to say that I'm retired in that, but I don't think I'm still practicing at times. You know, like, I can't feel sorry for you or support you or your cause or whatever, because what about me? What about my suffering? What about my cause? And, you know, that keeps all of us kind of starving. So that's a radical thing, to be a good neighbor, to be compassionate, and to have, you know, trust or faith in, you know, that there's more goodness. Radical.
So are you feeling radical, Nancy?
Well, no, I'm agreeing. I agree that it is important to feel, to just embrace the process and just, you know, focus on your healing and all that good. We do need people to be more neighborly, and definitely people who have been through it. We need that empathy and that support from each other. And that will help us also to become stronger as we share, as we heal, as we help. Something you said earlier was that a lot of people that have been through abuse, they find themselves looking to serve others, looking to give back. And I find for me that, like, what is my life worth, really, if I'm not helping other people? It helps me when I have those low self-esteem moments or those times when I'm fighting, you know, those feelings of feeling unworthy and, you know, all these different emotions that may come through. When I'm serving and I'm helping and I'm giving, I feel like my life is worth something. It helps me. So something that I enjoy to do, I enjoy doing at all times if I can. But yeah, we just have to, you know, be more neighborly and more supportive so that we're able to share more and help more and give more. Because, you know, it's important to give, but you also want to protect yourself in your healing process. So, you know, it's better if we're all helping each other and we want to be around each other and we want to help each other and grow and heal together. No judgment zone.
Yeah, I wish that I could get to a no judgment zone, but I have to admit that I at least have to kind of, it has to be the touchstone to my growth, because it's not there permanently. You know, I have to, I kind of almost have to experience something negative in order to remind myself that it's not all negative. There's more to life than that. And I wish I didn't have to do that, but I do, you know. But I guess pain is the touchstone of growth, is the expression I'm thinking. And it's true. You know, if we didn't have some kind of pain, I'll call it something else, let's say some obstruction, right? If we didn't feel frustrated, if we didn't, you know, if you don't feel cold at some point, you don't know what heat is, you know? So you can't appreciate the heat that you have, you know? But I'm not very good at it. You know, I do say, you know, where's mine to myself too often, way too often. And when I'm in that space, I'm having a, you know, I'm having a bad life, because it's, I got to get back to, you know, I've already got what I'm supposed to get. And it might get better, it might not, but it might get better. But the point is, I already have plenty. If I allow myself to have the perspective that I have plenty. If I don't, I'm going to slip back into that old idea not being enough, which I know I am enough.
Yeah, you are.
So this has been a great.
Yeah, you are.
Thanks, I.
You definitely. You are.
Good. This is a great show. We have only 3 minutes left, so I'm going to give each of you a minute to, you know, wrap up some final thoughts about this show. So who would like to go first?
Well, I'll just say, you know, it's always an honor to serve with you all. I am just, I'm happy that this platform is available to people. There are resources, there's a community, there's the support, and you're just not alone. So I'm just happy to be a part of this community, and let's continue healing together. Let's continue helping others to heal. And I can't wait to hear the areas of opportunity for volunteering that are open so that hopefully people that are listening or even some of us can get more involved. Y'all have a good night.
Well, I do too. You know, I'll reiterate that. We have some needs that we need to fulfill because right now there are too few people doing too many things. And that's when it gets frustrating. It's a lot better when, you know, we have more volunteers that are more evenly addressing the issues that they're capable of addressing. We don't want to give people jobs that they're not capable of. That's true too. But as I say, it's just a matter that there are too few people doing too many things, and not, you know, if we had a few more people, it would be fine. Jaime, what's your last final thought for a minute or so?
Well, one is, you know, I was thinking about this earlier with the dreams, but also just with all these daily experiences that there's always embedded in them. And you've mentioned pain a few times, Bill. You know, pain is there for us. Pain is asking us to pay attention to something. You know, whether it's physical or emotional or spiritual, I mean. And when I think of that, when I remember that, it's more useful than I'm not kind of resisting it. And that's, you know, where I was thinking before about observing the dreams, just like, you know, there's something here. It's just interesting. I don't have to understand it all because there's so much more going on that I don't understand that, you know, I might tap into, or I might understand if I could share with others. And that's part two is like, it's in the sharing in the community that we are so much wiser and more, and so you're talking about resources, you know, having more resources and able to do more together. So I am, you know, on a personal note, I have a son who had been trying to get to meetings, and he's basically saying, nah, they're not for me, or these people are in way worse shape than I am, and so on. And you know, and this is a group and a community and a kind of a meeting that I really value. And so I just thank you all for being here and for being a witness to others.
Well, thank you too, Jaime. This is a communal experience. If there wasn't a sense of a community involvement, I don't think it would be the same thing. So anyway, that's one of the important things. And anybody can be a part of this community. There are no limits. I really appreciate the three of you that have come on the show tonight, including Roberta, and then Nancy and Dr. Jaime Romo. And I look forward to having other shows with you at other times. Tomorrow night we have a special guest who you might or might not know about. It's Rachel from San Francisco. Rachel Grant, she's a pretty well-known therapist and coach and so forth up in that area and through the community. So please join us if you can for that interview tomorrow night. So this is Bill Murray saying we're here every night, 5 nights a week, at 9 o'clock, at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, and 5 Pacific. Join us whenever you can. May God bless you and the children of the world. And God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done. I know.
Blog Talk Radio.